This podcast on road safety is brought to you by Volvo Trucks and Buses, the safest commercial vehicles in the market.
Okay. Very good morning to everyone. I would firstly like to welcome all the members of the media here today to our second media roundtable. The topic today will be on road safety. Now, what we'll do is, in this media roundtable on road safety, we'll be discussing several aspects of road safety. I will be asking the panelists specific questions about this topic. However, if any of the other panelists then has something to add, please feel free to do so. We will have a Q&A session at the end of the second session. So for the media, we will have time to then go into specifics. And you may also ask the panelists separate questions off-site or in groups. After the first session, we will have a group photo over here to my left. And I would like to kickstart today's session by basically asking Mr. Khairil Anwar Abu Qasim, who is the Secretary General for ASEAN NCAP, to give us a short overview in terms of statistics on road safety in Malaysia. How are we doing in that regard?
Okay, thank you, Stefan. My name is Khairil from MIROS and ASEAN NCAP. First of all, thank you for the opportunity of having me here today. I would like to start this session with give you some good data. For 2014, according to Royal Malaysia Police data, we have to mention that because all statistics come from police. For 2014, recorded 6,674 fatalities, road fatalities, which is 7% reduction from 2013. 2013 recorded 6,915 fatalities. After 4 years of statute, or from 2010 to 2013, recorded very minimal increment of fatalities, we finally make a U-turn to reduce the fatality number by reducing 231. And from that 231, actually 141 deduction comes from the passenger car fatalities, means the driver and the passenger car. So 60% of the total reductions come from the passenger car that's really improved in recent years. However, for still 2014, our motorcycle death increased. It's now 62% from the total fatalities of 6,600. And passenger car is the second, while pedestrians is the third fatalities according to type of vehicles. In 10 years, we can see the motorcycle fatalities is 59% from total fatalities for 10 years. And bus and lorry, which is our topic today, for commercial vehicles, is less than 5%. The cause of total accident for 2004 up to 2014, we count this as one fatality equal to 1.2 million. This is old data. It's quite old. It's 5 years old data. But the cause of accidents for the country is 100 billion. From 2004 to 2014. It's a big numbers. And according to our last research, or last review, three criteria of accidents, which is human, road, and vehicles. Human factor considers 80% of the factors contributing to road accidents, while road is 13% and vehicle is 7%. This is what our statistic tells. And the major issues of maybe commercial driving is commercial vehicle is overloading, tire issues, is amongst the factors. So, we have a projection of if business as usual means if we don't have something extra, something irregular, maybe if we don't have the event like this frequently, the business as usual says that in 2020 we will have 10,716 fatalities. This is our projection. But thanks God, Alhamdulillah, 2014 has shown a decrement of our status. So we hope that our target 50% of 10,000, which is 5,000, will be met in 2020. But if you go details for lorry driver per se, for lorry trucks, I can say that it's steadily increased. It's not decreasing. But the bus, for the bus, the fatalities recorded a very steady numbers. For 2014, it's around 60 fatalities only. But the commercial driver like trucks and bus, trucks and lorry is increasing steadily. So that's, I think, what we should worry for today even. Thank you.
Thank you. I have just one question to clarify one of your numbers. You mentioned 5% bus and lorry fatalities.
Yeah.
That is the actual people in the vehicles, right?
In the vehicle.
Yeah, in the vehicle. Okay. Could you also, while we are on numbers, could you give us an insight as to how is Malaysia faring compared to our neighboring countries? You've given us a number of statistics, but are we seeing more people dying on Malaysia's roads than, say, in Thailand or Singapore, or are we faring better? How is it compared to other countries?
Okay. If we are talking on the perspective of Southeast Asia, we are not the first one. The first one is Thailand, and we are the second, actually, in record numbers. In fatalities by population, I believe we are the second one. Even Indonesia have more fatalities, but they always mention it's not properly recorded. So the actual number, because Thailand and Malaysia have a good system of recording, blessing in disguise, or I don't know. But if we properly recorded accident and fatalities, that's what we get. That's why Thailand and Malaysia having the highest fatality in Southeast Asia region.
Okay, thank you. The other interesting thing that I've picked up just now is the fact that accidents involving trucks, lorries, are on the increase. I would like to direct this question to the Road Transport Department of Malaysia, and I'm very glad to introduce Mr. Azaharin bin Alias, Assistant Director for the Automotive Engineering Division. Could you perhaps share with us if a new vehicle, specifically a truck, is being introduced into Malaysia? What would be the procedure in order to verify that this vehicle is road safe, roadworthy, and safe to operate?
Okay, thank you. Okay, good morning. Okay, actually for introduction regarding for the JBJ, actually JBJ we are committed to reduce fatality of the accidents, and also we want to improve the roadworthy of the vehicle, including of the commercial and also the private. Based on that, JBJ we have joined one committee, what we call WP29. Which is what we call World Forum for Harmonization of Vehicle Regulations. So, actually, we have joined that forum since 2006. And after we have joined the forum, we have, we can adopt UN regulation in domestic regulation. Basically, UN regulation is very well known amongst Europeans. So, right now, for the current vehicle. For what I try to say is for new vehicles must comply that's UN regulation. So in terms of the approval for the new vehicle, including trucks, we have implements what we call the procedure vehicle approvals mechanisms. That's mean this procedure we introduce to control the compliance, the specification of the vehicle before we give the approval to that model to be registered or can be used on the routes. So basically, roughly for the flow for the VTA process, actually the manufacturer should submit. That means they should prepare all the documentation basically based on the certification and also the test reports which standard they have complied. Basically, they should comply the UN regulation or Malaysian standards. So all the documentation should submit to JBJ, and JBJ will verify all the documentation. And also at the same time, we also done inspection to the vehicles and prepare for the report. And then the report actually we present again to the VTA committee, which is chaired by Director General of JVJ. So after that, after we get the approval, we issue the VTA approvals to the manufacturer. That's the overview for the vehicle type approval mechanism implement in Malaysia right now. So actually, the mechanism is almost same like European and also the among country like Japan and also Korea. So I think that's my explanation about the type approval system in Malaysia right now.
Yeah, thanks. To again follow up on that, without going into details like model numbers and things like that, I think everyone in the audience knows the old trucks without doors that are still moving on the highways. So what you're saying is that these vehicles are still legally allowed on the roads because they've passed the type approval at some point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Actually, after the model of the vehicle has been approved by JPJ based on vehicle type approval process, that means the model can be used. That means the construction, the specification has complied all the requirement and all the standard has been gazetted by JPJ. So after that is depend on the how the vehicle be used on the routes. So that's me in term of the maintainer, the inspection of the vehicles.
So yeah, okay, thanks. We are talking about vehicles, and obviously we have one manufacturer here present. Volvo is known for safety. Although I could do the whole presentation about what the company did in order to promote safety, I'd leave that to Mats Nielsen, who is the managing director of the Hub Malaysia for Volvo Trucks. And coming from the old trucks to the new trucks, I would like to know, and I'm pretty sure the audience would like to know that as well, what are the safety features that a Volvo truck has when you buy a brand new one? What's in it?
So thank you very much, Stefan. Thank you for having us here today. It's a pleasure. As you mentioned, Volvo very much focuses on safety. It's one of the three core values that we have, and we've had safety as one of them since 1927. We focus on safety in two areas. We talk about active safety. Active safety is where we try to avoid an accident from happening. It can be having ABS, or it can be having electronic braking systems. It can be having the safety cab that will limit the... that's a passive one. Lane changing systems, ways improved visibility, and so on. So these are features that we have to reduce or to prevent an accident from happening. Then we have the passive safety systems, and that's after the accident actually happens. We want to limit the impact in terms of injuries and so on. That can be seat belts. We invented the three-point seat belt in 1959. It's having airbags. It's having a cab that is comfortable for the driver, possibilities to adjust the steering wheel and so on. It's having this safety cab that I mentioned, so when if the truck rolls over, there will be less of an impact on the driver. There are crumble zones and so etc. And it's also having, for instance, our front underrun protection system. So when you have an accident between a truck and a car, in 75% of the fatalities, the car hits the front of the truck. With having this front underrun protection system, the car will not get wedged or not as easily wedged under the truck. It will utilize its crumble zones, etc., to better absorb the shock and protect the driver. So these are passive safety systems that we have. Can I just make a comment to your previous question as well, Stefan?
Please, yeah, absolutely.
Referring to what Mr. Azaharun talked about here before. Just one statistic that we have. Obviously, where I'm coming from Europe. So from a global perspective, we say we have studies showing that in the OECD, if we applied the latest vehicle technology, the latest currently available vehicle technology, and we enforced the legislation that is valid properly, overall in OECD, we could reduce traffic accidents by some 50%.
Still by 50%. Because that's what we are saying is there are still accidents in OECD countries, but we could further reduce that.
That's right.
Yeah, and we could obviously apply this to Malaysia, right?
Of course.
Yeah. What we've heard in the first presentation was that a lot of road fatalities are actually motorbike riders. Do you have any idea why is that? What happens there? I mean, if I'm driving along the roads, yes, there are motorbikes, but I think there are more cars than motorbikes. So how does it equate to more fatalities?
Basically, on statistic-wise, the vehicle registered at Road Transport Department, I think the car and motorcycle is equally at the same numbers. And that is the problem, because neither one is majority. So it's the balance systems between motorcycle and the car that makes the mixed traffic, especially on this traffic jam of KL per se. But of course, there's a lot of measures to tackle motorcycle safety. But it's not as I can refer what's easy as what we can improve in cars. It's hardly for us to put any airbags in the motorcycles, never use. And of course, we cannot put seatbelts in motorcycles. Yeah, we can have PPE, a good PPE, protective equipment, like airbag jacket per se. But it's hot in the country, nobody's going to wear this kind of protection, and it's also expensive. While the price of the motorcycle is getting lower and lower, we can have a motorcycle with the price of iPhone today. There's a motorcycle from, I believe, from China that we can buy for 2,500 ringgit. It's very easy to get a motorcycle today. And with the improvement of passenger cars safety, that's where the gaps, the motorcycle fatalities increase compared to the car itself. And one of the popular measures, such as dedicated lane for motorcycles, for the road, we have it in a federal highway, we have it in Putrajaya, but it's still expensive to do it. That's why we have the mixed traffic, and to tackle these issues is more on human. I mean, we have to do more training, we have to do more awareness, either for the other drivers or even for the motorcyclists themselves.
Thanks. That's, of course, going straight back to Volvo, Mats. I remember you've done the ICETRAC study. Could you just shed some light on what you found out during that study, because it involved research into accidents between trucks and motorbikes.
Yeah. So just first a couple of numbers. When you have a truck involved in an accident, be it a single, just the truck or other road people on the road, in 15% of the cases, the truck driver passes away. In 65% of the cases, there are car passengers that die, and 20% what we call unprotected people on two-wheelers or pedestrians and so on. So the iStrike project, we see road safety as kind of an ecosystem. We have the vehicles, we have the drivers, all types of drivers on the roads, we have the state of the roads, we have the legislation and so on. In terms of iStrike, we then decided to work between ourselves, Volvo, with the University Putra Malaysia, Agency Innovasi Malaysia, as well as a university in Sweden called Chalmers, who's also been very much focusing on road safety. So together we looked into what are the causes of accidents between motorcycles and trucks in Malaysia. How can we reduce those accidents from happening? And one of the things that we observed, we had all kinds of equipment to see how the eyes of the drivers move, how well you can spot the motorbike, etc. And we realized that even if they have the daylight or the lights running daytime, you still don't really see the motorcycle well enough because it's too low. The truck driver is higher up than the car driver. So might sound simple, but what can we do about that? So we came up with some proposed solutions in terms of making sure that it's easier for the truck driver to see the motorcyclist, in terms of how can we make the helmet more visible, for instance.
Okay, thank you. That then would trigger my question back to Azaharin. Who is responsible to drive the agenda of road safety? Should it be companies like the truck makers, or is it the government that should really have a close eye on what's happening?
Actually, both industry and the government. Government, we need to identify which policy to be implement, and industry should implement what the policy have decided by government. But before we decide. For that policy, we need consultation. That's the basic. So, actually, in terms of the activities have been done by JPJ in terms of to improve the road safety and also the roadworthiness of the vehicles. And actually, for instance, for truck. They should comply with 52 UN regulations. That means they have complied all the 52 items under UNR regulation has been gazetted by JPJ. So that means actually that's cover safety aspect and also environments. And in term to improve the protection during collision, especially for the motorcycle and also others vehicle lights, for lights vehicles. Actually, we have implement some regulation, UN regulation in terms of frontals, rear underrim protection, frontal underrim protection and also lateral protection. And also in terms to improve visibility of the vehicles, especially for the truck. That means that truck should comply certain requirement is mentioned under UN regulation. For instance, they should install the side marking lamp and the rest lamp has been gazetted by JPJ. That's the JPJ done to improve our road safety.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I would like now to ask Chandra Mohan a question. He's a senior manager at Taipan Co., a local transporter who would obviously be using the trucks that would have to comply to regulations. And to introduce himself, perhaps he could elaborate a bit on his studies for his PhD that he's doing, because it's quite fascinating in terms of the future of road safety.
Thank you, Stefan. Morning, everyone. When we talk about safety, it's a bit difficult when you want to talk about safety on a standalone basis. You have to see in a totality, meaning to say as far as social, economics, and also safety. So if we discuss things on purely on safety, certain countries, certain places in which the social factor affects the safety factor as well. So a lot of things have been done, as what has been said by the panels. You know, new technology, safer trucks, fuel-efficient trucks. But you still see accidents, you know, in the rise. Except quite recently, there's a dip. But the overall trend, there is a rise of accidents. Okay, now what we have found is basically on the social part, the habit, the attitudes of the road users, not in specific to truck drivers. You see, for example, if I'm driving a truck, in a public domain with other road users. My mistake, whether it's my mistake or the other road user's mistake, involves an accident. So it is not from you should not see from one angle. That means all road users. Further than that, I think the economic growth in the last 10 years, you can see the roads like Kasas, NKVE, the congestion. You see, as you congest the place, the probability of accidents are far higher. So to answer, you know, these are our views. To see it as one from one angle, you may not be able to solve this problem. You have to see it in totality. Thank you.
Thanks. Well, I think Mats had an interesting analogy over coffee earlier, if you don't mind.
Okay, I took away my cup because it was getting cold.
Okay.
No, I said to Stefan, it's important to see the full picture. We talked about different stakeholders. That's why we're different panelists here from different authorities, different players in the transport industry. And I said I wanted a cappuccino outside. And it's a very nice cappuccino machine, makes good cappuccinos. If you like that, you should try it. Unfortunately, the cups are not for the cappuccino. The cups are for the espresso, I think. So when I had my cappuccino, the thing overflows. So I think I'm trying to say that you need to see the full picture. Somebody is responsible for the coffee machine. Somebody is responsible for the cups. But somebody should also see that it has to work all together. You cannot have the different components. We need to try to see the full picture and the impact that we all have together.
Mm. Yeah, thanks.
But once again, the coffee was good.
He is on commission. Sean Koo is joining us from a company called DriveWise. He's the principal driving instructor. I've personally done a session with him where he's talking about defensive driving. And we've just heard that at the end of the day, an accident is an accident and it doesn't matter who causes it. Perhaps, Sean, you could elaborate a bit on what is defensive driving?
Thank you, Stephen. Basically, we all grew up going for L driving tests, didn't we? And basically, when we went to L driver training, our main aim was to pass the test. So where did we learn all our survival skills in terms of defensive driving? We've heard a lot about going to dinners, going to parties, and all your friends will always tell you, good night, bye-bye, drive safely. But when you say that word, drive safely, what does it mean to most of us? We probably can quote all the road safety campaign slogans like, Pandrulah cermat jiwa selamat. But what do we do as drivers that pinpoints our survival in terms of defensive driving? Have we thought about how often do we check mirrors? Checking mirrors in terms of defensive driving, we talk about, okay, we want to know somebody's behind us. Are they following us closely? And are they going to hit us? Now, for the ladies' part of you, these days is security. Anybody following you back to home? So it's critical for us to understand the pure form of what defensive driving is about. It's like what Steven says. It doesn't matter whether you are at fault or the other party is at fault. If we are injured or killed in an accident, what's the use of being in the right by the eyes of the law? So like the American will probably tell you, you're right, but you're dead right. Yeah? So think about it in terms of us as drivers, as human factors, like Encik Karyl said, human factors play 80% of the role in terms of accident. So what can we do to change this human behavior? To be better drivers, to be safer drivers? Or are we accepting the Malaysia boleh way of driving? It's always been done that way, so let's join the gang. Yeah. So it's a long road to face, I would say. It's not an easy task. As Matt said, we have to look at the whole picture. It's good to have companies like Volvo's who has always focused on safety, building better cars, building better trucks, and helping us survive a crash. Having active safety is, to me, is much better. Why? We are trying to avoid having a crash rather than be dependent on passive safety and hope that we will survive the crash. Yeah, it's great news to know that fatalities have dropped to 6,006, because for all the years that I've been teaching, number of fatalities has always been on the uptrend. Yeah, in terms of accident, it's the only part of economy in Malaysia that is always up and up and up. Never economy gawat man. So what can we do at the end of the day? So hopefully with today, we can aim and come up with strategies that'll help all of us survive.
Thanks. But back to Karyl then. You mentioned that accidents involving trucks are on the rise. Do we have any idea why is that?
That may be a tough question to answer. But if I can back to the statistics, 10 years ago, in 2004, the numbers of fatalities, this is only truck driver, a lorry driver, 150. Mm-hmm. Now we have 220. But 3 years ago, it's 250. So it's like as up and down, but steadily increased. Mm-hmm. I don't have the exact number why it's happening, but I do believe the exposure, because steadily every year the lorry, the trucks will be registered, and that's accumulate the number of vehicles.
So it's a probability issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Statistics. And
maybe whatever measures we have done for today, until today, is not really effective. Why I'm saying like that, if we are comparing to passenger vehicles, in 2012, significant reduction until today. As I mentioned earlier, 60% of the total reduction, 141 fatalities out of 231, is reduction of passenger car. Mm. What happened in 2011 or 2012, if Road Transport Department have gazetted Regulation 94, crashworthiness, and each car manufacturer, 2 years before that, they will be ready. And of course, for Myros also, we implement NCAP, New Car Assessment Program, 4-star, 5-star car in 2012. And we hope, or we think that this has happened because we have put the right measures to improve the car safety. And if we can, today onwards, work together, focusing on these fatalities of commercial, right? Because it's only 220, meaning that we can almost check the case one by one, like Brunei, you know? Brunei is only have 27 fatalities. So they have, to get the Vision Zero, or zero fatalities, is very, it's very promising. And because it's small numbers for the lorry drivers and truck drivers, we also have opportunity to analyze case by case so that we can really answer your question before.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. Back to Chandra as transporter. How is an accident impacting on your business, if you had one? What's happening? How do we have to imagine this as a business? Because, I mean, if we as personal or as persons have an accident and are injured, then we can't go to work. But how would it look like in a company? What are the if one of your truck driver had an accident, what are the implications?
Implication is this, what we fear. The first fear is fatality towards our driver and the public. But here in as a transport operator, truck operator, I will say we are a bit luckier comparatively to a bus operator, because you see, our goods, you know, as everyone is aware, the goods that we carry, any transporters, are not life. I mean, not humans, you see. So if any mistakes do occur to truck business, it usually does not involve fatalities, usually. Maybe you need to check back the records, but this is based on the past 20 years of experience with the various companies. Fatalities are very seldom. But if you read the papers, the same mistake if a bus driver, you know, does, then your numbers will grow fast. That means in 10s, 20s, 30s, 40s. So as far as truck business are concerned, we are very cautious with the regulatory bodies, because once accident takes place, the regulatory bodies also steps in very fast. That is one. As far as the insurance coverage is concerned, also, you know, the premium rises from year to year. So these are the two aspects that besides the first major aspect of the public fatalities that we are very concerned. These are the other two concerns that, you know, affects our business. Thank you.
Can I add to that?
Yes, please.
Mr. Carroll here mentioned before a cost in Malaysia, I think, was it from 2004 to 2014 of 100 billion ringgits, the total costs related to road accidents. A number that I have on an OECD level is it can cost up to 4% of a country's GDP. And this is the money side of it. Then, of course, we have the personal side, the human tragedies and losses. We're talking about 1.2 million people that die globally on the road. And those are the official numbers. We know that a lot is not reported. And we talk about 10 million people that are crippled every year in traffic globally. Once again, the official numbers. When it comes to a little bit to your question, Stefan, we have some estimates, once again, on a global level when it comes to downtime, if we look at the economics of it. Mm-hmm. So when a truck is involved in a major accident, the downtime on average is roughly 360 hours. So that's a cost for the transportation company. And if it's what we call a medium accident, then you're talking about 60 hours downtime on average.
Okay.
But again, once again, of course, the major part of it is the human side.
Thanks. Now, obviously, I also have to ask a provocative question since we've got JPJ here. Is there enough enforcement being done?
Okay, maybe it's the tough question actually in terms of enforcement. Actually, okay, it's quite sensitive also, enforcement issue in JPJ actually. So because actually public also don't like the enforcement. So that's mean the roadblock. So that's the basic idea in Malaysia actually. So however, JPJ, we need to makes enforcement, because based on the enforcement activity, we can monitor the compliance, what's the regulation or specification has been gazetted by JPJ. So right now we have tried to find the the new idea, the new mechanism, how to enforce our regulation, not only on the by the roadblocks, by and also at the same time we have introduced the new concept in terms of enforcements. For example, we have tried to find as many publics, and then we try to give awareness to them in terms of the road safety, and at the same time we have conduct more activities involve public in terms of activities in JPJ and also enforcement activity. So that's the current situation in JPJ for the enforcement activity.
Thank you. Back to Sean. Can you actually predict accidents when you're driving? Are you trying to teach people how to foresee situations that could lead to an accident?
Yes. In terms of defensive driving, we call this hazard perception. Most important is for us, most of the time, we are smart drivers that we can figure out, okay, this junction is dangerous because I travel it every day. Bikes do come out from junction without completely stopping. Okay, I've done the anticipation. But the biggest question comes back, what do you do as a driver? Do we continue still driving down the road because it's my right of way and the bike is supposed to stop? If you come out, I hit you, you pay me lah. Your insurance have to cover the impact. But when it comes to loss of life, then the anticipation, only if I had done this, only if I had done that, then it becomes too late. So at the end of the day, it for us in driver training, it comes down to the human behavior rather than looking at laws, looking at enforcement. Yes, enforcement plays a big role, but the human behavior is the biggest one to change in order to make everybody safer.
So should I view every truck and lorry as a potential hazard?
I would say in terms of driving, everybody is a hazard on the road because you can't tell what they're going to do. We don't have a crystal ball to think, is this driver going to be sleeping or in modern technology, texting and playing with the telephone, or late at night he's drinking and driving or falling asleep at the wheel? We don't know. So the only way is we can plan ahead, looking at individual drivers, what are they doing? Is there any telltale sign that tells us he's going to pop in front of us or he's going to brake? We don't know. So the best way is we try to anticipate what may happen. And if it does happen, you are ready to respond to it and not panic. But if you never thought about it and you're thinking about what to eat for lunch, what time's my meeting, what time to pick up the kids, what do I have to cook tonight, then we're not focusing on the driving task anymore.
Yeah. Yep, thanks. Back to Chandra. Are truck drivers actually using mobile phones?
Yes. I mean, speaking about mobile phones, it's a common thing. It is not you can't segregate between drivers and non-drivers. Basically, I think so. 11-year-olds also have phones, you know. So it is a part of our life already. It's not a luxury item kind of thing. So, you know, basically, almost all drivers have phones.
So we should also anticipate that a truck driver might be using a mobile phone and be distracted. As I said, he is a potential hazard, right?
Yes, you can say that, Stefan. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. not to put down the drivers, but you know, I think we can't. None of us here can say we've never used the phone when we were driving. Do we have any other comments on this subject? Have we missed out anything? If not, then I would call for a break now. While we were talking about general safety in this section, the next session we will talk about the driver and the role in road safety. I hope that you all stay on for this one.
That was the first part of the discussion. We now continue with the podcast on road safety. Volvo Trucks and Buses is the only truly global commercial vehicle company that applies test procedures that exceed standard safety tests.